this is a talk about illegal drugs, just so everyone knows that. Not heroin, not cocaine, nothing that's contributing to the drug trade. I just wanted to kind of bring that caveat to the front, because I am a medical professional, and so is Savannah Steele, who's going to be here in a minute, and we don't condone the use of illegal drugs. If you were to go do anything that we talk about on this program, that's at your own risk. You never know who's making these things. You never know, you know, what exact drug you're going to be getting. So just be aware that illegal drugs and people that claim that they have actual DMT or ayahuasca could be pulling your chain. You could be ending up to a trip to the hospital or something like that. With that said, what we are talking about tonight is DMT, ayahuasca, and maybe some other of these psychedelic drugs that are under investigation. Not criminal investigation, but under investigation from various intellectuals out there, universities, even medical doctors, which we'll talk about in here. You may have heard recent news where the DMT and ayahuasca, they're both kind of the same. We'll get into that. Is curing depression on its first use, which is kind of amazing. So it's opening up the doors again to these medicines and their investigation, what they can do as far as, you know, instead of being in this weird illicit drug world, to bring them to the forefront. To understand this discussion, you first have to kind of suspend any preconceived opinions or notions that you have on the matter. So whether you feel this is positive or negative, kind of put those to the side, and we're just going to discuss it for what it is. It's a natural chemical that they find in various plants. I can't remember how many there are, but there's like 50 different plants they've found this chemical in. And they've actually found it as an endogenous chemical, which means something that the human body makes naturally. And I think it might have something to do with the dream state. And they found it in lab rats and mice and whatever, all that other stuff. Tonight we have Riley Anderson, who is a I don't know, I'm going to have him explain it. He's some sort of med student that deals with natural stuff. I don't know. But that's it. We'll talk about that stuff. Again, don't be stupid. We're just doing this for a discussion. That's it, I guess. And our podcast tonight is brought to you by Onnit. Waitwhatif.com/Onnit. Onnit is a total human optimization website. We sell all sorts of supplements, exercise equipment, kettlebells. We have all sorts of studies on the website. We have, there's actually a gym out in Austin, Texas. You can find workouts on the website. Just check it out. Go through my link, waitwhatif.com/Onnit.
You're listening to the Wait What If podcast.
We're about to blow stuff up.
Say we were to walk out in the middle of the woods and find a 50-year-old moonshine bottle.
I think you could drink it.
I think I would drink it.
You know, his mom was probably really controlling, and he wet the bed as a kid.
Reminds me of a strip club, actually.
Does it really?
Yeah, this is the champagne.
Ladies and gentlemen, make sure you put the money.
I'm just going to eat this bacon and drink this whiskey.
Be prepared to expand your mind and question your reality. As always, your host, Kevin Sullivan.
All right, so thanks for coming, Savannah. We were going to do a three... A three-way Skype call, and she made her way all the way out here. I thought...
That's how dedicated I am.
I'm under the impression that you like to get out and...
That's true, too.
But then you get out, you come in, and you just hang out in this back room.
But you have no idea how big your house is and how small my house is.
Oh, really?
In comparison. Yeah, it's like I'm in a city right now because there's so much space around
me. You don't know what to do with it. You're a pharmacist. and you're single, right? You should be like living on the lap of luxury.
I would be.
If I was a pharmacist, I'd have like, I don't know. I don't know. In my mind, I'm picturing just.
All kinds of luxuries around me. Is it getting weird?
No. All right.
No, I always live like there's about to be an apocalypse, so I'm really cheap.
Oh, that is true. And if you listen to the last episode, which I just finished editing today because I'm going to have it out in 2 days. Yes. I do everything in 2 weeks ahead of time. But so it'll come out, and for the listeners, it make no sense because when they're hearing this the apocalypse have been out a few weeks. But whatever, I just finished that episode. We're gonna have it out probably by Friday. We talked about who we have on the air is Riley Anderson, and I won't be able to do a good job introducing you, so I'm gonna let you kind of explain your background, your student, your go ahead, and we'll kind of ask questions after your intro.
Sure, no problem. Thanks a lot for having me. This is very exciting. We're talking about some of my favorite subjects, so I've been looking forward to this from the first time we started our communication. So I went to university in Calgary, Alberta, which is Western Canada, and I got my degree in kinesiology. And if anyone's unfamiliar with kinesiology, it's essentially human kinetics and movement, biomechanics, some physiology, a little bit of pathology, but very, very interesting stuff. And when I graduated, you know, unfortunately these days, the degree is kind of like what a high school diploma used to be. It's so commonplace and there's not a lot you can do. And in all honesty, I was a little tired of school at the time. So I did what a lot of people in Calgary, Alberta do, and that's go and work in the oil and gas industry.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
what do they call it? The oil sands, or was
Okay. Yeah. I think it was the Democratic Party that did a really great job smearing it, the whole dirty oil thing.
That's right. Yeah. There.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it was the economy to be in. I even had it as my student job when I was going to school. So actually, when I convocated and they realized that I wasn't going to be pursuing anything in that field, they offered me a position, and I worked my way up to an analyst role, and learned that very valuable lesson that it is not money that makes you happy. You need a lot more. You need purpose, and you need some meaning. And I was really lacking that. And so I was lucky enough to be led to these psychoactive plant medicines that we're going to talk about, and it really woke me up and reignited my passion for health sciences. And that's where I find myself today, on the other side of the country, going to the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine. I can get into that in a little bit.
Okay.
And so here we are. I basically packed up a suitcase and got on a plane, and I've moved out here. So so that's where we're at. I know there's probably a lot of questions about what naturopathic medicine is, and there's a lot of confusion, and it's very fair confusion. The large majority of us have scientific degrees, biomedical sciences, even masters of sciences, kinesiology, things like that.
Riley, my next question, or how we're actually really going to start with this, is because, I mean, I have pages and pages of notes and whatever, but I like the conversation better. So I kind of use my notes just to make sure I don't miss anything that I want to cover. But can you walk us through the ayahuasca ceremony that you went to, and almost narrate it to us in, you know, 5 to 10 minutes about, you know, where it was, what you were expecting, what it was you, I mean, obviously you drank the tea and stuff, but yeah, just kind of give mm-hmm. us, and then slowly what happened and where you went.
Sure. Do we want to get into, if any listeners are unfamiliar with ayahuasca itself, do you want to get into that first?
Oh yeah, I guess maybe we should bring that up. Yeah.
Okay, so let's start there. So hey, you ayahuasca. Know
what? I'm sorry. Now that you mentioned that, I realize we just kind of went into introductions, and then I totally didn't even mention what this whole episode's about. So yeah, for the listeners, this is about ayahuasca and DMT. I'm very interested in DMT, but it's pretty much one and the same. And Riley's going to tell you what ayahuasca is.
Sure. So ayahuasca is it's essentially a psychedelic plant brew. The word itself comes from a native language spoken in South America called Quechuan, and it means vine of the soul. And I always thought that was a very interesting translation, because if you think about how a vine grows in the courtyard or on the side of your house, it kind of can weave up and down and diagonally and left and right, and it finds these spaces and crevasses, and it will essentially exploit those and explore them. And a very similar effect happens as you begin to explore your own psyche. And we'll get into that in a little bit too. So there's essentially two components to the popularized versions of ayahuasca. We have the Psychotria viridis, which is a shrub, and that's the one that's containing DMT. So about for every 1,000 grams of this plant dried, you'll have 1 gram of pure DMT. That ratio is actually quite strong if you think about it.
Yeah. Can interject real quickly, DMT is dimethyltryptophan, or tryptamine, right?
Tryptamine.
Okay, and it's actually N-dimethyltryptamine, and it is the psychoactive component that's found in, which is amazing to me, upwards of 50 different plants will have it, plus I think it's 4 or 5 species in animals. It's endogenous in the animals, including human beings.
Including human beings. Yeah, I mean, you can find it in varieties of common grasses, things that look like wheat, many different types of trees and shrubs. And so that is very interesting. It's just a small molecule. I think it's 30 atoms. And if anyone out there doesn't have a chemistry background, if you make a small circle or dot with your carbon pencil, you'll have about 3 million carbon atoms in that little dot. So for a 30-atom compound to have such a profound effect on the brain, I think is just really cool.
Yeah.
So this shrub that contains the DMT, it's from the Rubiaceae family, which I mentioned that because that's also where coffee comes from.
Mm-hmm.
there's some other really popular, like cinchona bark is used to treat malaria in Africa, especially in regions without proper funding and resources. So I just think that's really interesting how if someone thinks, I don't know about botanical medicine, just drink a 20-ounce cup of black coffee and tell me how you feel and if there is any effect. These things, our body knows how to react to them, and it's completely fascinating. So that's the one part of the plant, the psychoactive part that has dimethyltryptamine in it. And the other part is called Banisteriosis capi. Capi is being the vine, so that's C-A-A-P-I. And why we have this is because if you were just to ingest the psychoactive shrub, we have enzymes in our gastrointestinal system that is going to cleave the DMT. It's going to get rid of it. It's going to metabolize it. And if you think about it, that's actually a good thing, because as herbivores, if we're out there and we're looking for food and we're eating plants, we actually don't want to be tripping out all the time, leaving ourselves vulnerable to maybe other predatory animals.
Sure.
So this is an adaptive mechanism we have in inside of us. But where the vine component comes in is it has something called an MAO inhibitor. So the monoamine oxidase is that enzyme that will break down the psychoactive component. So when we inhibit that, we don't have a breakdown of the psychoactive component anymore. It's allowed to be absorbed from our small intestines into our bloodstream and become a neurotransmitter. And so the synergy of these two plants is very, very important. We have the psychoactive component on one hand, and we have the other that is essentially an enabler for it to get into our blood and get into our brain and for the magic to happen. So that is ayahuasca in a nutshell.
And this is known to be thousands of years old. They actually don't know when people first started doing this. But
I found a study from Torres in 1995 saying that they were able to radiocarbon date pipes testing positive for DMT is as far back as 4,150 years ago.
Wow. Yeah, see, that's pretty amazing.
Over 4,000 years ago, we have DMT resin in pipes, and that was found in northwestern present-day Argentina.
Wow. And when they speak to the tribes now, anthropologists, they ask, how did you know? Because like you said, you have the one branch or one bush that contains the DMT, and then you got the one that's got the MAOI inhibitor. They had to know to combine these two together. And they said that the plants or the trees spoke to them, which I thought is kind of an interesting thing.
That's very fascinating. There's that's one of the prevalent theories, of course, very, very difficult to prove. I think that would be really interesting. I would wonder if you just took the the psychedelic shrub, the Psychotria viridis, and you took it in big enough amounts that maybe you would override the enzymes and you would have a psychoactive effect, and then maybe in that state, that's when you could have some of that communication about, hey, try this vine and combine it. Maybe that'll work. Maybe that's what I was thinking. But the other theory is that you can watch mammals in nature eating these vines. And so, for instance, you can actually go on YouTube right now and watch video of a jaguar eating them. I hear in microdosing it actually helps with hunting. That's one theory about why the jaguars eat this stuff. So humans could have also just observed animals eating it and went, well, it's eating it and getting some kind of benefit. Maybe I'm going to try this too. Then the other theory is just that they combined it from pure human curiosity. The vine is not inactive itself. It can act as an antidepressant. There's some other effects. So if you're already using that vine and then you have this shrub that has a psychoactive effect, I think it's just human nature to say, well, what happens if I combine these two? And so perhaps it was something a little bit simpler. Of course, my favorite is the divine communication.
That's right. These people, like, we go into the jungle and we're sort of taken aback by all the sounds, all the smells, the colors. We don't know what anything is. You drop me in the middle of the Amazon, I'm a dead man within a few hours, I would imagine. But these people, I mean, this is their bedroom, you know? This is their living room, their kitchens. Goodness. And to have that, like, they can look around and they see every individual leaf and individual vine, and they know just by looking, you know, what is good for this and what is good for that. And
monoamine oxidase inhibitors are kind of older versions of antidepressants.
Sure, yeah.
We don't really use them as much anymore. I don't even know if they're prescribed to new patients.
You can prescribe them. I wouldn't, because it MAO you need for a lot of things, you know, in your daily life. You can, like, if you drink grapefruit juice on an MAO inhibitor, I think it messes with you. There's all sorts of drugs. It pretty much interacts with every single drug that's out there and puts it at a very toxic level. Basic drugs, too, like Tylenol, you wouldn't be able to take, or it could poison you. So, Well, that's why they don't use them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that makes sense. But I think that actually even SSRIs somehow interact with these with ayahuasca.
It's contraindicated.
Right.
Oh, really?
Exactly.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I kind of want to get back to your ayahuasca experience. What made you decide to even, to go down there and do this?
Sure.
Presumably you went to South America, but I don't really know actually.
Actually, I did it in the forest of Alberta, Canada. And what's really important about that is I have a message to tell people that in order to have a life-changing breakthrough, you don't have to go down to South America. But what is very important is that you have the proper set and setting, and that your shaman is well-trained. And so I've done several multi-day excursions. The first person that I sat with, and when I'll use these benign terms like sat or drank, it means that, you know, I participated fully in these. So when I sat with this shaman, he was from South America and lived his whole life there, and actually just emigrated to Canada. He'd been working with plant medicines his whole life. He's one of the most amazing and fantastic people I've ever met. But what's very important is the set and setting is proper, and that your healer is very experienced and knows exactly what they're doing. And that your intention, of course, that why you're going there is solid and substantiated beyond you just want to go get higher, you just want to experiment. So you really can have, you know, the way I think of it is you don't have to go and learn how to ski in the Swiss Alps or in Austria. You can learn how to ski in Japan if you want to, as long as you have a slope, have some snow, and you have a good teacher. And that's really what's important. I'm still told by that community, someone like me really needs to get down to Peru, but I still will, but I just can't imagine me having a more profound experience than I even had. It's an important thing for listeners to note.
Sure. And if I can jump in, from what I understand is it would be the last thing you would want to do recreationally, because it's not really a recreational experience. I mean, first of all, when you first drink it, and I'm sure we'll get into it, you have the purgatory effect, vomiting, diarrhea. And then from that point on, you've got 6 to 8 hours where you're not in control. This thing takes you on a ride, and it could be bad. Mm-hmm. It could be good. It could be, I mean, you never know. And I don't know why anyone would do that recreationally. Now, for you know, introspective reasons, I could see why you would do mm-hmm. it. But continue.
Yeah. So let's get into the ceremony, because it's very interesting. So you show up there perhaps midday, and everyone else is getting there, and you're unloading your bedding for the night, and you start setting up because everyone's going to be in a circle. So what we found, we weren't in tents. We were in. We found an old lodge situated in the forest, and with this nice big space that we could all sit in. So the I'll use the word shaman, even though I mean that's a term that's a little bit watered down these days, like love or God or something, and they actually call themselves something different, but I think just for simplicity's sake I'll stick to that word. So the shaman is not there yet. The shaman is kind of consulting with his or her helpers in another room, kind of getting ready, because it's quite a spiritually taxing experience on them as well, looking after 20 or 30 people a night with their own individual problems, going through their own journeys. So everyone's setting up their bedding, and we're just passing time. Some people are meditating, some are stretching, some are talking and laughing. It just, however you need to prepare yourself for this journey that's going to happen. And for myself, I was scared. Like, my heart was going, my heart was racing. I was there by myself. I did know one other person there who kind of brought me into that community.
I'd be terrified, to be honest with you. I would be terrified.
Yeah, and you should be. I think that's a good thing. So once the sun starts going down, that's when we know the ceremony is going to start. So it starts getting dark, and the shaman kind of comes into the room. And from my experience, this person, you know, had the long white hair, you know, a bigger, almost heavier set, older Colombian man. And he just had this presence about him, and it was very magnetic and very powerful. But he had a smile on his face. He wasn't taking himself too seriously, and that really put me at ease. And so then, in this case, it was a male, so I'll just use the word he. So he sits down at the front and is kind of whispering. He has what I would call almost, and I've seen this a couple times, almost like a muscle man, someone that if things go wrong and you need to hold somebody down, you have that person.
Yeah, okay.
And then a gentler helper who might help with things like lighting the sage or singing some songs. And so there's a bit of consulting. You know, they're all quite lighthearted, which
Wait,
is
so you're
great
saying all these...
probably expected from drinking this stuff.
Are you saying those qualities were all in him? So on the one hand, he was like this muscle man. On the other hand, he was this more softer, gentler. Okay.
Or are these actual people that are with him?
These are actual people on each side of him.
I'm sorry. I'd completely misunderstood.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And I've actually seen this same type of setup. You know, there's a couple times where you have the shaman, and you have then there's always someone, you know, that can handle another human being. Can I say shit on this podcast?
Absolutely.
How dare you?
So if shit goes wrong, you know, I've seen them have to actually handle people before as well. And we can get into that in just a sec, but they sit down and then, everyone is quiet, and the shaman will do, an introduction about what's going to happen. And the first thing he says is to drop all of your expectations. I know you all read online articles. I know you all have a certain expectation of what this is going to happen, but all of you are going to have your own individual journeys. So drop all of those expectations right now and try to come at it with a clean slate. He tries to give you some advice as far as the journeying goes. So he says, if things get too intense, just know that you do have some locus of control, and you can request for the intensity to be turned down. And that was a great piece of advice that I used. And then he just says, make sure that you have your intention at the back of your mind. You know, some people are there because they're trying to heal traumatic episodes in their life. Some people have been diagnosed with terminal illnesses, and they're having difficulty resolving the thought of their own mortality. Perhaps they recently lost a loved one. or you're just stuck in a rut and you're depressed in your life situation. So whatever your own individual intention is, just make sure you focus on that and focus on what you want to get out of this. And then one by one, the circle gets up, walks over, kneels before the shaman. He looks at them, gets almost like this energetic intake, decides how much ayahuasca he's going to pour into the cup, gives it to them, and you shoot it back and you put on your tough face because it tastes awful. It's so bad. It is just, it's like this dirty, decrepit kind of decaying plant material tasting thick type of shot. You know, it's almost like in a big shot glass. And it's almost like sludgy.
Boiled leaves and twigs. I can't imagine it being delicious.
it just kind of kicks off this whole theme that this isn't going to be easy. From the moment you even taste it, you just know this is not going to be easy. And so then you just you walk back to your seat and you wait. And this was when my heart was really going. And it's just like, what did I just get myself into? There's no turning back now. And it takes about 30 minutes and everyone is completely quiet. There's rules within the ceremony. There's no talking. As soon as you ingest the ayahuasca, there's no talking to your partner next to you. And there is no touching either, because you can be going through a very introspective journey and someone can pull you right out of it just by touching you. So there's some ground rules and you just go back and you wait. And after about 30 minutes, from my personal experience, you start getting the most lovely visuals that you've ever experienced in your life. And this isn't happening with your eyes open. You're not seeing things dancing on the walls. It's all happening in your mind's eye. So I guess from a physiological standpoint, I think that's called the thalamocortical activity. And it's very similar to what you would get in a dream state, like when they do neural imaging. So it's happening, these visions are happening in your mind's eye. So when I say that I saw this or I saw that, it's happening with my eyes closed. So the most, you know, I would see things that were like peacock phoenixes, multicolored, just floating around and just these types of quick visuals. And then I saw what would look like these little dudes from like Monsters, Inc. movie. And they were kind of like knocking on my brain, opening it up a little bit, like peeking in, talking to each other, almost like taking an intake of what type of a person I am and what type of work is going to have to happen tonight. And this is within 40 minutes. You know, I'm seeing this stuff. And then the silence is broken by the shaman singing the first song. And it is these songs that have to do with reverberations and healing frequencies. At least that's the theory. And they are these beautiful Amazonian songs that have been sung by tribes people for thousands of years. The particular tribe lineage that I was hearing was the Shibibo, Shibibo. And the way that it interacts with the medicine is something truly special. It seems to activate the medicine even more, and it seems to send your journeying even deeper than beyond those visualizations. Those first few visuals I was getting that's really just scratching the surface. There's nothing personal about them. They're just very interesting. But then the journeying starts, I would say, after about an hour. I don't know if you want to interject at all and stop there, because I can just keep going about the journeying. But
it's from what I read, it's very common, and it's to have that being that like you talked about, these little people going into your brain and stuff. I've heard experiences of people where, in fact, I think, well, two things I want to get at. What I think is amazing about this is that a lot of these, there's a lot of similarities between individual experiences on mm-hmm. ayahuasca. You could take it in Calgary and someone could take it down in Lima, and you might have a very, very similar, two different people, two different cultures, two different batches of this, and the DMT experience is very similar. People talk about, yeah, like you said, first the visual, but then almost like you're making connection with conscious being or beings or whatever it is beyond the realm that we know about. I just think that part part's amazing.
Yeah, and you know, Terrence McKenna made the comment of the machine elves quite popular.
Machine elves?
Machine elves.
Nice.
Maybe, you know, that was a rendition of what I saw. I've certainly seen things similar to that as well on these multiple excursions I've been on.
Can I ask a question? From a skeptic's point of view, it's possible that somebody would say, oh, well, you read Terrence McKenna's book, so you were expecting this, so that's why you saw it. What would you say about that?
Well, I would say that I actually hadn't previous to this.
Excellent.
But
great answer. I love it.
But, you know, I think that's perfectly reasonable. We're human beings are very impressionable primates. And I would think that perhaps that could come into play. But the other part of it is that you are just not in control of these images and these visions. You're in the back seat and someone else is driving. You're not saying, I would like machine elves to appear and they appear. Like, you know, you can drive a little bit in the sense that you can push on the brake if it gets too intense. You can steer it slightly. You're really just sitting back and these things are manifesting. And when you're in it, you forget who you are. You forget, you know, that you have a name and you were reading Terrence McKenna 2 weeks ago. These things are completely gone. I would say it's possible that it could influence you, but I think the point of having these consistencies is very interesting, and I think it's beyond just us having this propensity to be influenced.
I like to think, I'm usually the skeptic, and if you listen to any of my old shows, I'm always like coming up with a scientific explanation for things, because we've had some far out people on this show, psychics, it's been a while since I've done the fringe science sort of shows, but they're a lot of fun, but I always try to take the skeptic side. However,
sure.
I think they're... Personally, and I think it's more fun, at least for me, when I'm hearing about it and when I'm reading about it, to think that there is something metaphysical there going on.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. I mean, there's some folks say that because this chemical is all over the place, it's in our bodies, that this might be either a God's chemical or whatever, you know, some sort of being that maybe was here before us, it created this for us, or it could be, I mean, whatever it is, but this is put here for a reason, to communicate with a next dimensional, or to communicate with the universe itself.
I think our brains can only perceive 3D, right?
Yeah.
Three dimensions. But isn't it, I think it's hypothesized that there could be many dimensions.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so if you can imagine that maybe this is a way that we're actually able to communicate, maybe our subconscious is capable of perceiving more than just what our conscious mind is capable of perceiving, and somehow this experience gets us into that, some alternate dimension.
I don't know. Riley, what are your thoughts? Are you... more on this is a chemical and I'm having a chemical reaction within my brain and it serves a purpose? Or are you saying, or are you on the fence that, you know, maybe this could be something metaphysical, something beyond what we fully grasp?
Sure. There's two sides to my answer. One is what's going on in my mind during the ceremonies, and that what happens during my sober waking thought process. It's comparable to what you just talked about. I actually had this really interesting vision that this ayahuasca is the way that we get to communicate with our creators. And with the vision I had, it was almost like this creative race instead of one god. It was more like a race of people. And then of course I snap out of it, and then in my in my sober waking thoughts, I think, well, maybe all it's doing is it's really just dissolving the filter that we always have when we're walking around. We're, you know, we're listening to the sounds of traffic and we're smelling this and that. And we have all this input of senses, and perhaps that simply when you, that all of that's taken away and certain parts of the brain are, figuratively unplugged and others are illuminated, that gives you a different sense of your reality. But, I just had, you know, such incredible visions. I if my brain truly can do that on its own without, you know, any other help, I would be amazed. But it really seems like you are communicating and learning from something much more intelligent than you are, much more ancient than you are, and that clear teacher-student relationship is there. So there's two thoughts further about that, well, are you communicating with this plant, or are you communicating with the higher version of yourself, the higher processing version of yourself, or maybe more of this a higher conscious entity that's still part of you, but and I think these things are a mystery, and we can only hypothesize about it, but I would really like to think that this is a way that we can access a very ancient and intelligent teacher. So whatever form that's taking, whether it is just yourself, or whether it is something secondary, I guess the most important thing is that the lessons that you take out of it are the same regardless of what's happening out there.
Okay. And so we were at, the shaman started singing and it almost interacted with your journey. Where did it take you next?
It took me through the roof and into our solar system. Actually,
you felt yourself levitating.
The first very. It was a very quick, like being shot out of a cannon kind of thing. And again, this is happening with my eyes closed. I don't know why I was thinking about my own mortality and death, and it's something that keeps me up sometimes. At three in the morning, I'll wake up and go like, "Holy shit, I'm in my 30s. How did this happen? Wasn't I just 18 yesterday?" And I've only got 50 years left. And so I was going through a lot of those types of thoughts. And so when I got shot up, kind of out into the solar system, I was just kind of floating there. I could still see Earth. We didn't go that far, and. What happened was I was able to see an image of my own body floating in space, and much like if you were to see a small mound of sand and wind takes it, you'll start to see the particles of sand starting to go away and the mound of sand gets smaller and smaller, you know what I mean, from top to bottom?
Yep.
And that started happening with my body from top to bottom, and what was happening was the various chemical constituents of our body, which is nitrogen, carbon, oxygen, some of the metals, I could see them going away in different colors, and they went all the way through my body, and then the chemical constituents started circling around, you know, just in a gravitational way around the solar system, and but this energetic field remained. And so the lesson that I took, and this is all nonverbal, but the lesson that I took is don't be so worried about your own mortality. 33 years ago, you were essentially deceased, and was it painful at all? No, it wasn't. In the same way that, you know, you came to this world, your chemical constituents go back into the earth, go back into the universe, but energy cannot be created or destroyed, and the soul will persist. So stop worrying so much. And, it's that type of thing over and over and over again throughout the evening. And after that, I just thought, I'm not going to be worried about this anymore. And it went a long way in taking away my worry about my own mortality.
That's amazing. Because
and then you just kind of go back.
Well, no, what I was going to say is it's amazing because, you know, like I said, if you hear about other people's experiences, even on just pure DMT, which is not an ayahuasca ritual, it's literally people either smoke or inject pure DMT, and they say it's like a catapult. I mean, it hits your system. You're gone for maybe 10 minutes. But a lot of the common things that people talk about is angelic figures, traveling through, or there's always a travel sort of situation. And then there is always something with death and mortality. Whether one woman said, and this was on, have you ever seen The Spirit Molecule? It's I don't know who directed it, but
I think it's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. Yeah, on YouTube. I mean, it's everywhere. But people, so for the listeners, if you ever want to learn more about this, just watch that first. It's like an hour long, maybe an hour and a half long. But one woman said she felt herself, or everything that is corporeal, everything that's of this world is just stripped away till you are. Basically just energy, and all the connections and everything that you have here on Earth just don't matter, because that you're no longer part of this Earth during this journey. You are part of a greater I guess energy force, and all the relationships and all that, I mean, I suppose you could think about them, but they say that just doesn't matter. What matters is what they're seeing. And one woman talked about going into a room full of souls, and she wasn't frightened, and they were souls before they reincarnated. I mean, everyone has these journeys that reflect on mortality. And again, the similarities is almost, it gives you goosebumps when you hear that people have, you know, similarities. I just said that, but.
So was it your intention when you went in to kind of deal with your mortality, or what was your intention?
My biggest intention was just trying to figure out why, you know, I had all of these material things in life. I had a home, and I had a job, and I had a friends and family that loved me, but there was something missing, and I was still just deeply dissatisfied. I had been on SSRIs. I was working with a master social worker doing some counseling for a year. And it was just, I guess, an adjunct therapy to me trying to figure out what am I going to do to, you know, do my life honor and actually be happy. And not only that, but be able to then use that and make a difference in this world and make a difference in whatever community I find myself in. So that was my chief intention. And, you know, there was all these sub intentions, like, yeah, the mortality thing came in there. I was a little worried about, you know, some family members were having a tough time with their own health, and I was just worried about that. But really mine was you know, more of like the depressive state of mind and the rut and really worried that I wasn't able to get out of it. And so I was just trying to explore why, what's going on that's making me so unhappy right now. And I did find it, you know, I did within just a couple ceremonies. And that was really that I realized that in my job, I was really there to make money, and I was really only there, and I was only benefiting myself. And benefiting myself, I found, has got old. I wanted to benefit other people. I wanted to make a life. I wanted to have meaning and purpose, and, you know, and bring a smile to other people's face and make some kind of a difference. And so that's exactly what I needed, and that's why I find myself in Toronto on a journey to becoming a naturopathic doctor. And so it really did lead me here, and I don't think I would have been here if it wasn't for that. I don't know if I would have figured it out if it wasn't for those ceremonies.
It's amazing. So this is an illegal drug in the States. I don't know if it is up in Canada. Studies are showing that people are being treated and sometimes cured of depression, lifelong depression, with as little as one treatment, either with DMT or ayahuasca, which is amazing.
Yeah.
The second, is it DMT or is it MDMA? Yeah. I've heard studies on MDMA in the States.
I have heard about that.
This one was psilocybin.
Psilocybin, yeah, which are I think kind of cousins. Okay. So that's the first amazing thing is that it's working on depression. The second thing is the side effect of this drug. Like, I understand heroin being outlawed. I understand cocaine being outlawed. I can go down to the corner at our local alcohol store and buy a fifth of bourbon and drink myself to death completely legally on my front lawn. Yet this, this medicine, this drug, people aren't homeless on the side of the road taking it. They're taking it and bettering their lives. Yet it is completely illegal. It's mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm. You know, my thought on that Well, so I believe in the States it's a Schedule One drug, which essentially means highly addictive and no therapeutic benefit.
That's right.
Which is just another example of how we're completely being lied to, because it is exactly the opposite. It is non-addictive, and because it's not fun, and it's very difficult work, and the therapeutic benefit, I mean, life-changing, is quite therapeutic, I would say.
Sure.
I'll share with everyone. I have no problem saying this. I mean, there's alcoholics and addicts on both sides of my family, and unfortunately, I inherited some of those genes. I'm not the type of person that can have alcohol in my suite. I don't even keep marijuana around anymore because I'll just drink it, you know, and I'll do it. And but so for someone like me, I haven't done ayahuasca for over a year now, actually, because I don't have to. Because it's not something pulling me towards it just to do it for the sake of doing it. And furthermore, as one of my favorite philosophers, Alan Watts, says, is once you get the message, hang up the phone. And I have gotten the message, and the phone has been hung up now for over a year. And so it is just amazing that it can be outlawed. But my thoughts on why it is because you can't have everyone and if everyone drinking ayahuasca and leaving their labor jobs or their cubicle jobs. We're not going to have an economy anymore. We're not going to have a workforce. I think it's dangerous from the government's point of view, perhaps, for something like that. I don't know if you believe in this dumbing down of America theory. There's some documentation on it. But, you know, perhaps that plays into it.
How dare you?
Perhaps that plays into it as well. That might be slightly conspiratorial, but you can't have millions of people leaving their jobs and to go take a sabbatical or to pursue a new vocation. I think it would really disrupt society if it was, let's say, mandatory or something like that, but everyone drinks it. But I mean, that's my thoughts on it. I just don't know why else we're being lied to such an extreme degree. In Canada, it's the scheduling is slightly different as far as the laws goes, but it's a Schedule 3, which gets you 3 years in prison for possession, 10 years to brew it, and 10 years to administer it and traffic it.
That's pretty heavy.
It's heavy, and you know, look what it's doing. I'll tell you what the side effects are. I woke up the next morning, and I called my father, and I said, I've never expressed gratitude to you for essentially putting your life on pause so you could have children and working day in, day out, and I just want to say thank you for doing that to me. I called my mom and, you know, told her something similar. I called my sister and told her, look, you're getting married and I haven't been that involved and I'm sorry and I want to be more involved. Like, that's the side effects of this drug.
You know,
it's very, like, it's very positive and it's very loving. And a lot of the introspection you go through is just like, man, you know, even those white lies I told, or I wasn't very honest to this person, I have to just stop doing that, and I have to come clean, and I have to be more honest and, you know, nicer, and those are the outcomes. And you do have to wonder why it's being shielded from the public and why it's seen as dangerous.
In the U.S., it was okayed for some studies on it until Nixon back in the 70s came up with the scheduling, and then from that point on. There was one time, it was a doctor by the name of Strassman. He was a MD medical doctor back in, I want to say it was 86, 87, that was okayed to do DMT experiments, and he had a whole, you know, slew of volunteers, and you know, he did it. I think it was a experiment that went on for a couple years.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about set and setting. That study was the patients. That was from the spirit molecule,
right? Yeah, that's
right,
yeah.
And the patients were in a hospital bed. That was the set and setting.
Yeah, so. It didn't matter to them. Okay. They were like, are we going to have a bad trip because we're in a hospital room? And but they said the second it was administered, it didn't matter because they weren't there anymore. They were wherever the molecule took them, whether you want to say that physically. Do you know anything about pure DMT?
I have smoked DMT a couple times.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So my opinion on smoking DMT is, you know, it's exactly what we love to do in the Western world, and that's extract, and compound, and increase the strength. It is quite incredible visually. But for myself personally, it's so quick that there aren't the lessons in there. It's more of something that you would do recreationally. I never got anything out of it other than, you know, being able to have this 360-degree vision everywhere in this circus fantasy land of DMT with these, you know, figures coming in and out and these odd sounds and the most vibrant colors and layering and things you've ever seen or imagined, but there wasn't the lessons. So I actually wouldn't recommend it. Okay. I wouldn't. And I've given it a couple goes with some intention attached to it. And I just think it's too fast and it goes away too quickly. And for me, you should be partaking in some type of DMT ingestion and have some intention and meaning behind it. Mm-hmm. There's other ways if you just, you know, want to have some cool visual. I mean, there's other things you can do. But I just think we've taken away it's the true purpose of something like dimethyltryptamine. And in the same way that we tend to have gotten away from nature in many ways, we've gotten away from the true meaning. And so that's my opinion on it.
That makes a lot of sense. The drug itself originated as an ayahuascan ritual. There was a purpose to it. And you're right. I guess to boil it down and just to get to the pure drug at the strongest level, you're missing the whole 4,000-year-old tradition of why people took it. I never thought of it that way. That's interesting.
Yeah. I thought it was more of a half-life thing. Like, because it's out of your system so quickly, you really can't experience it as deeply as you need to make changes.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to hear the length of time that people... So people will have an experience, they'll go, and then... I mean, I was watching a documentary last night called Eye of the Needle. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Mm-mm.
But the guy, it's very short, so it'll take like 15 minutes, like a DMT trip.
I'm going to write it down.
And I have the needle. And the guy said he went, he was kind of skeptical about ayahuasca, but had been hearing a lot about it, so he decided to try it. And, you know, he just talks about the video shows his experience. And then it says something like, yeah, the next day I woke up and he kind of says everything was a lot clearer. It was a lot happier. I mean, just a weight had been lifted.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened in 2012. And at the end of the video, it says, and it's been that way ever since, which I thought was pretty rad.
Wow.
Well, kudos to those people that do get something out of it. I think that's mm-hmm. awesome. And then for the rest of their lives, that's it. And I've heard that too with psilocybin or psilocin, depending on what type of mushroom you're messing with, but just a couple sessions and either their addictions have gone away, and maybe we can get into ibogaine quickly here as well, or depression or it's really changed them. I used to tell my friends when I came back and I started talking about the experiences, like I was trying to verbalize that, guys, like my brain's been rewired. And I can feel it. And then I stumbled upon this video recently with, I don't know if you're familiar with David Suzuki, but he was narrating this video for Canadian Broadcasting Corporation about effects of ayahuasca on the brain. And they were going through like neural imaging, what parts it affects. And, we have our reptilian and mammalian and human brain, and it really affects those human aspects of it. For instance, the amygdala that's associated with emotional processing and emotional memory. And they were hinting that there is some real physiology behind it, dissociating neural connections and forming new ones within those parts of the brain, like the limbic system, hippocampus, amygdala. And when I saw that, I just got goosebumps all over my body, because I've been saying this for years and trying to explain it to my friends, and then it looked like there was, you know, there is some. I haven't researched. Maybe I can get a list of references from that video, but it looks like there's some real science behind an actual neural rewiring.
Wow. Yeah, people say it's after an experience too, and you just kind of touched on it, that and this is for people who are doing ayahuasca to maybe approach an addiction problem, addiction of heroin or whatever, that when they're done with the ceremony, there seems to be a presence that's with them for an amount of time afterwards. Maybe not forever, but there seems to be a guidance that stays with them.
Yeah, immediately after, that's commonly known as the integration phase, where the lessons are very fresh in your mind, and you're supposed to be taking some of the lessons that you learned from the ceremonies and really putting it into real-world practice and implementing them. And I could see during that integration phase, you feeling like there's still that spiritual presence with you. And I would like to mention that almost, again, with the consistency and ubiquity, it's a very loving, female, motherly spirit. There's different drugs, like the San Pedro cactus, that's supposed to be more like a grandfather plant. The lessons are more hard, and you need to do this, and a little bit more stern. But with the ayahuasca, it's very loving. Even when you're trying to be hard on yourself during the trip, it's saying just okay, but don't be too hard on yourself. Like, you are a human, and you know, and so it's to have that type of spirit with you afterwards is very encouraging. To implement some of those levels lessons afterwards.
San Pedro cactus being peyote, maybe? Or
let's say yes. I think it is.
I don't know. Yeah. I that's just the only thing I've heard of.
I think it is. Yeah, I've never done it. I mean, I don't experiment with a lot. I believe it is. Yeah, so it's just interesting how different plants seem to have this consistency of different spirits with them. I think that's so neat, because really all that's happening at a level of physiology or neurochemistry are these atomic compounds are going into your brain. They're normally hijacking like serotonin receptors or dopamine receptors, and they're just sitting in there, and that's all that's really happening. But of course, there's so much more. And really all that we can measure right now, you know, as far as I've mentioned a couple times, like the neural imaging, but you cannot measure the visions.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that, you know, last night I had a dream and I was in the desert and there was this big white whale like floating around in the sky. Like, science can't measure that or put it up on a screen, but that doesn't mean it didn't exist and it didn't happen.
Right.
You know, maybe one day we can. Maybe one day we'll be able to hook something up into my brain and it just projects right onto the wall and everyone can watch my visions. I think that'd be pretty cool. But we're not quite there yet. And you know, it really is. I really am a fan of science. I think it's incredible what we can do. But it is so much more than that. A more mechanical reductionist way to look at the brain of an action potential, and you know, it's sodium in and potassium out. We're missing something, because it's more than that.
Sure.
And I don't know what we're missing, and that might be, you know, that now, you know, we can start to talk about that spiritual aspect. Well, it's sodium in, potassium out. It's an action potential mixing in with your spirit and projecting these incredible things in your mind's eye. Yeah. Well,
the sodium and the potassium channels, those are what we know. We don't know what we don't know, which is why it's so difficult to explain some of this.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's. I mean, when you break it down to the mechanics of the brain, that's an easy thing to, well, for some people, it's an easy thing to grasp. When you, and I think about this sometimes, when you look at, so you look at an atom, let's just say you look at one hydrogen atom that's in your body,
mm-hmm.
It's nothing. I mean, it's just empty space.
It's a nucleus and an electron floating around it.
Yeah. And then when you think about, so that alone should be enough to keep people up at night, because that electron isn't even representing. It's that electron's representing an idea of where that electron could be. It's never actually there.
Right. Right.
So and it's bouncing in and out of existence. So technically,
yeah.
It's in two places at once. And this is, we're talking subatomic mm-hmm. quantum mechanics that are spooky mm-hmm. and in general like that. And then you got to think, your entire body is made up of that. Every single inch of your body is made up of that dead space, that empty potential existing space. And then you realize 99 point, I don't remember how many nines there are after that, but it's like 99 point, there's five nines, 99999 of that, of your body now is just air. It's just empty space. Yet somewhere in there, something wired within that is the ego and the id and the super ego. And if it was as simple as to say it's a machine, then most people should run exactly the same, but everyone is individual, and we can't scientifically measure what that individual is. What is the individual? And you know, you take ayahuasca, and perhaps it's giving us an idea of that. I don't know. But I think, and again, the listeners are, if you've listened to my other shows, you're probably like, who's this guy, meaning me, because I'm always like, nope, black, white, there's no gray. But in this sense, it actually makes sense to me that there would be something metaphysical to it. At least that's what I like to believe.
Yeah, I've been fairly staunchly atheist until I started studying a lot of this ayahuasca stuff, and I'm kind of starting to get a little less atheist.
Really? So it's and you said, Riley, you too. So the it's pointed you towards a higher being.
Interestingly and amazingly, it really has. And I was exactly the same way. I mean, I was maybe eased my way out of a little bit of Catholicism into agnosticism and into full atheism, and I was there for a long time, and now I'm back into, wow, I it's very dangerous for me to think I know exactly what's going on out there, because I have no idea, you know, that there is more going on out there, and they're telling me, you know, hey, like, we're so glad that you took this and we're able to finally talk. Like, how have you been? Like, did you forget where you came from? That you're just an energetic being, and you know, some of the communications was welcome. Like, we've been waiting for you. Like, why did it take you so long? Kind of thing. And now, you know, now we can really start the fun part. But yeah, I just, you know, I had these visions about, you know, I do think the world is a wonderfully mysterious place. And one of these visions was this communication saying, look, it's really not that complicated. It really is just, you know, protons and electrons and quarks and leptons. And there's a reason why we have the similar laws of gravity on Earth as we do billions of miles away in another solar systems, and there's this consistency out there, and it's really not as complicated as I make it out to be in my mind, and that's because essentially whoever these people are, this race created this world like a computer program, and that's why, you know, it's very mathematic, and that's why we see the same ratios, you know, in a solar system as we do in a snail's shell and things like that, and the same math works out everywhere. And when you're going through it, it's just so profound and clear, and you understand it, and then you get out of it and you go, I can't tell anyone about this, I'm gonna sound so crazy. Like, I remember after a few of those, and you know, the first few nights these were happening, and I remember going, what am I gonna tell my friends? Like, am I gonna tell my friends that they're, you know, that panspermia is for real, and you know, we're this, you know, we're just kind of created by this alien race, and we're almost like in a computer program, and that's why, and they created it so that we can't see it, that's why it looks like we can't find any other life out there, and it looks like for all intents and purposes it looks like infinite space, it, you know, because we're not supposed to be able to figure this stuff out because we're limited by the program. It really sounds, you know, it sounds strange coming out of my mouth, and you know, I'm a very rational guy, you know, as I'm a big fan of Michael Shermer and the Skeptic Society and you know, Richard Dawkins and all that, and even so, I know what I went through, and it just seems so real, and I don't know why. I don't know why those visions occur. I don't know why those lessons happen. But at least I can take some of them into the normal waking world and make some positive changes in my regular life. But all that other stuff, I just sometimes they do come back to mind, you know, at nighttime, and I just go, what is that? I mean, if you look at the concept of infinite space, and as far as we can tell, that is what's going on. I mean, that's psychedelic in itself, just to think of that, you know. The concept of the Big Bang is insane. What are you talking about? It was the size of the at the head of a needle, and then it just exploded out infinitesimally in this like exponential pace, and then like, where did all this matter come from? How was it the size of a pin? What? And that's our best scientific explanation. Yeah. That's the one that prevails right now. And so there really is some really crazy stuff going on out there, and you don't really have to look that far, and you can find it within the realm of science. Some of these thoughts, and that's something else that really comes to the forefront during these ceremonies, is you just go. Like, I remember I had this realization about, we always think of, we'll watch a space documentary and think, outer space, and it's out there and it's so far away. Like, I don't know exactly how far our atmosphere is, but maybe 50 kilometers this way is outer space. It's not that far.
Yeah.
It's really not, it shouldn't be that something that we see is so foreign or separate. And the gravity of that we are on a planet, floating around a star that's part of, I think, billions of other stars within our own galaxy, that's part of billions of other galaxies, each with their own billions and trillions of stars. That kind of, that the weight of that hit me in the middle of one of these ceremonies, and I'll never forget that feeling, because it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
That is happening.
It seems like, if you're a physicist or somebody, like a student of physics, or I don't know, any other topic scientific like this, you should go and have an ayahuasca trip to to understand your topic a little bit better.
You picture in the 60s just somebody burnt out. These were smart people that knew something about this, and they had the wherewithal to, I guess, experiment. I don't know, someone has to be the first to do it. It's took some balls, I think, but
it does take some bravery. Everyone that was sitting with me in that ceremony, I think of as brave individuals and spiritual soldiers, if you will, because it's scary to go into that realm. It's unfamiliar. There are what I would describe, if I may get metaphysical, as there are some evil spirits you run into, and you have to learn how to deal with them. Luckily, I was given a little bit of coaching, and you can take their power away by, like, the way that I did it is, you'll get these big demonic, very clear, burning things come and appear and want something from you. And the way that I diffused that, I would just kind of look at them and say, I see you. Do you have anything interesting to show me? Do you have any lessons? No, you're just scary. Okay, then I don't want to talk to you. And they would kind of disappear from that. And so there are ways that in your psyche that you can dissipate these scary spirits. But some people don't have the ability to do that, or they didn't have the coaching, or just something is lacking. And those are the people that now you need that muscle person that's next to the shaman, because they start verbalizing. It's not always English or coherent, and they start moving around physically, writhing around on the ground. Not exactly screaming bloody murder, but really getting loud with their verbalizations, and that's where you really start to see the magic of the shaman and what his or her role is coming out. So they'll come over, the muscle man will hold him down, and the shaman will sit as he's being held down, writhing, and start to sing these songs to the person, maybe blow some sage on them to try to calm them down. And they'll work with this person until it's gone and until they're calm again. And you see this happening throughout the evening. You have people crying, and they'll let them go through what they need to go through. But if it's like chronic crying throughout the night and they really need some help, then they'll come over, or maybe that's where the more gentler of the assistant healers will come over with the shaman. So you have a different team coming and helping the person that's crying and weeping uncontrollably. And it's the same thing. And you know what it really comes down to is it's just human beings healing and helping other human beings. And it's really beautiful to watch. And it's wonderful. And I think maybe I got some of my inspiration to make this big life change watching them and looking, wow, like, humans really can help other human beings, and sometimes all it takes is just just singing to somebody, or what a big difference a hug can make to somebody. you know, or a simple compliment on someone's new haircut or something like that. You know, like we really have the power to make others miserable and hurt others, and we have an equal amount of power to help other people and heal. I guess now we're getting kind of into the end of a ceremony, and then what starts happening is you really start coming back into your body very slowly. For instance, you start to get your awareness of the physical space of your body. You start, you know, your breathing maybe normalizes a little bit. Your eyesight normalizes a little bit. The sun might be coming up. It might be 4:30 or 5 in the morning. And unlike other drugs that I've tried in my lifetime that are very brutal when you're coming back into your normal state of mind, ayahuasca, much like the motherly love that it gives you, it just rocks you very slowly back into your body, and you kind of wake up and everything's fine. And then what happens is, so you're all still in the circle, and some people choose to sleep there. Maybe you'll sleep until 9 or 10 in the morning, and others choose to pick up their stuff and go maybe into another room to sleep. And some people are just wired because they've had the most amazing experience, and you know, they're outside talking and watching the sun come up and watching the birds flying through the sky, and everything seems to have a slightly different gravity to it, and maybe a deeper meaning as far as connection goes. And I love that part. I love coming back into my body and talking to other people. I'm one of those people that goes outside and watches the sun come up and you know, watches just things that seem so simple, like the wind blowing through the trees is so beautiful at 4 or 5 in the morning after one of these experiences. And then you try to get some sleep. You eat healthily throughout the day. You try to stay away from things that are too salty or too sugary. You should probably stay away from meats, just a very clean diet. And then around dinner time, you start prepping yourself for another night. And so the most I've ever drank back to back was 3 nights in a row. And then it's time for a break.
Yeah. I can't imagine going more than one.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess in a nutshell, that's been my experience. I mean, there's a lot of other incredible visions that I could share, but I don't think they're just more interesting than actually meaningful for anyone to listen to.
Yeah. So. But no, that was perfect. Taking us through the ceremony like that and kind of chatting about it, I think it worked out really good. You had me zoned in for a few minutes there. That was it was just interesting listening to your experiences.
That's great. Yeah. You know, you have to be reserved with how much you talk about this, because I don't talk about it with everybody. So this has been just a wonderful platform and opportunity, and I want to thank you again.
Hey, no problem.
For anyone actually listening, I think, do I have to say allegedly so the government doesn't come after me? This is all allegedly. I did all this stuff.
Yeah. How can listeners not get in touch with you? But I guess you're on Twitter, right? Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. So Natural Freak, the word natural underscore FREQ, FREQ being short for frequencies, which of course I'm also very interested in. Okay. Singer-songwriter too, and also believe in the healing power of music, especially since watching the healing power of these shamanic songs throughout the ceremony. And cool. So that's how you can find me. I'm normally just posting things about healthy eating and exercise and just good lifestyle choices, and also just very interesting things about the natural world.
All right.
So, yeah.
All right. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. Have you ever done a podcast before or anything?
I have not, but okay. The reason I have this microphone in front of me is because I'm going to start. So
all right.
I've been grabbing the equipment, and it's something that, you know, I'm a podcast junkie, just a complete podcast freak. I've actually been choosing podcasts over music for a couple of years now, you know, and I never thought that would happen. And so, and I, as you can tell, I love to talk and tell stories, and I love to see what other people are interested in as well and what they're passionate about. So that's going to be in the works, maybe spring or summer.
All right, Riley. Well, I appreciate it. And do you have any plugs you want to ring up or anything?
Twitter at Savvy Steel.
You start Twittering more?
No, not really. I just basically retweet yours. And okay. I actually started following you just because I was going to be podcasting.
Like us on facebook.com/WWIPodcast and at WWIPodcast on Twitter. Drop us a line at waitswhatifpodcast@yahoo.com. Listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Internet Radio. Enjoyed your listening experience. Now go forth and expand your reality.
Yeah.
I wouldn't need to take the ayahuasca to be vomiting.
Once the...
I made a stupid joke. Sorry. Please continue.
No, that silence was perfect. I liked how that came in there. Messing with you.